If you have a Bible with you, hope you do, open it up to Matthew chapter 25, if you would. Matthew chapter 25. When we think about the teaching of Jesus, one of the first things probably that comes to your mind, certainly does to mine, is his use of what we call parables. One writer called parables the most characteristic element of Jesus' teaching. About a third of the material of Jesus' teaching in the Gospels is in parable form. And in fact, a lot of the expressions we use in our everyday language, even now, come from Jesus' parables. We talk about being a good Samaritan. Well, that's from one of Jesus' parables in Luke chapter 10. We talk about waiting until the 11th hour, the last minute, to do something. That actually derives from a parable in Matthew chapter 20. We talk about the blind leading the blind. That's a parabolic statement of Jesus in Luke chapter 6. And other expressions that we have borrowed that have worked their way into the English language. And even people who aren't familiar with the Bible find themselves using those. The Greek word that is translated parable means to cast alongside for the purpose of comparison. And what parables do is they take a situation that was found in everyday life and they cast it alongside a spiritual truth in order to enable the hearers to comprehend that spiritual truth. A parable is about taking a story that moves the listener from the known to the unknown, using something that is familiar to instruct in things that maybe are new and unfamiliar. That's what parables do. And Jesus spoke all kinds of in parables in all kinds of different ways. Some of the parables are simple sayings or metaphorical expressions. Some of them are simple comparisons. Others are longer stories and allegories like the one that we're going to be looking at this morning in Matthew chapter 25. They're a common feature of Jesus' teaching. Very often they were used to instruct people who were new to discipleship, to kind of weed out those, if you will, who weren't really interested in pursuing spiritual things, because many of the parables are things that you have to give some thought to really understand. Some of the parables were directed at even at those who had been disciples for a long, long time to instruct them in important concepts. That's what the parable does that we're looking at this morning. It's in Matthew chapter 25. Let's just begin by reading it. Matthew 25, beginning in verse 14. Jesus says, "For it is just like a man about to go on a journey who called his own slaves and entrusted his possessions to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, each according to his own ability. And he went on a journey. Immediately the one who had received the 5 talents went and traded with them and gained 5 more talents. In the same manner, the one who had received the 2 talents gained 2 more. But he who had received the 1 talent went away and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. Now after a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. The one who had received the 5 talents came up and brought 5 more talents, saying, 'Master, you entrusted 5 talents to me. See, I have gained 5 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master.' Also the one who had received the 2 talents came up and said, 'Master, you entrusted 2 talents to me. See, I have gained 2 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful over a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master.' And the one also who had received the 1 talent came up and said, 'Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. And I was afraid and went away and hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what is yours.' But his master answered and said to him, 'You wicked, lazy slave. You knew that I reap where I did not sow and gather where I did not scatter seed. Then you ought to have put my money in the bank, and on my arrival I would have received my money back with interest. Therefore, take away the talent from him and give it to the one who has the 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more shall be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who does not have, even what he does have will be taken away. Throw out the worthless slave into the outer darkness. In that place there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. This is a familiar parable to most of us who have been disciples for any length of time at all. This year, the elders of our congregation chose as a theme to emphasize service to God and man. That is one of the things emphasized in this parable. It teaches us about our responsibilities to God, about using them properly. So what I'd like to do this morning is just examine this parable for a little while, see if we can make some applications that will help us live out the teaching that we find here. This is a parable, in short, about doing all that you can with what you have been given. These servants were entrusted with talents. The picture is of a master who goes on a lengthy journey, a journey probably of months or even years, and while he is away, he entrusts his slaves with the welfare of his estate. All his money he puts in their charge. Each was entrusted according to his own ability. Each was responsible for his own trust. And each one was given a lot. You know what a talent is in the New Testament? Because even one talent was a big responsibility. A Jewish talent was a measure of weight. It was about 58 pounds. And if you're talking about a precious metal of some kind, that would be worth a lot indeed. Probably what Jesus has in mind is the Roman attic talent that was worth 6,000 denarii. Let's break that down. One denarius was the typical wage that you would pay a day laborer for a day's work out in the fields, for example, or the vineyards. So a laborer might expect to earn, maybe if he worked really hard and had a good employer, 300 denarii during a year, maybe a little more. 6,000 denarii is the value of a talent. We're talking about an amount that would take an average laborer between 15 and 20 years to earn. A huge amount of money. So think of it this way. If you want just a rough measure, think of a talent as like being put in charge of $1 million. What would you do if somebody said, I'm going on a trip. I'm going to be gone a long, long time, and I have money that needs managing. I want you to manage $1 million of my money while I'm away. That helps us understand what is entrusted to these servants in this parable. Even the servant who only had one talent entrusted to him was given a lot to work with. Their job was to do something with that money. A bondservant, as we've talked about in the past, in talking about service to God and man, a bondservant was under full obligation to seek and to improve the interests of his master. These talents didn't belong to the servants, after all. They belonged to the one they served. And the important thing was not the amount entrusted to each man, nor necessarily the amount that each one gained with it, but how well each of these servants used what was entrusted to him. And as the story goes, two of them did well. One failed. The one who failed, as we saw, did not fail because he didn't have enough to work with. He couldn't come to his master and say, look, you left me with this pitiful little sum of money and I couldn't do anything with it. Would you say that to somebody who entrusted you with $1 million over a period of time to invest or to work with to try and make gain for them? No, the analysis of the master in the story was that that one servant was lazy and wicked. He did no harm with the money. He buried it and kept it, but he didn't do any good with it either. And so his trust was given to another who had proved himself faithful over his charge. Now, how does that apply to us? It's easy for us to look at the parable of the talents and say, well, that's about the talents that God has given me. And that's right, but we need to be careful. We need to be careful because we use the word talent to mean an ability. And that's not the only thing that we need to see in the talents, the measures of money, that are given to the servants in this story. All of us, I don't care who you are, all of us have been given gifts by God. Or might be better to say we have been entrusted with them. They are on loan from Him. They vary in kind. They vary in quantity. Some of them we all share. Some of them are unique to one person or another. We have mental abilities. We have skills of various kinds. We have time. We have money. Possessions. Opportunities. Relationships. All of those things need to be considered when we're talking about applying the teaching of the parable of the talents. So when I ask, what are your talents? Don't just think, what has God given me the ability to do and what has God not given me the ability to do? That's too limited a scope. What opportunities has God given you? What blessings has He provided you? What situations has He put you in that could be used to further His kingdom or bring glory to Him in some way? That's what we need to be thinking about. All of us are entrusted with gifts from God. One of the challenges in that is not to be discouraged or envious if we see somebody else who has more talents, if you will, than we do. Because there's always going to be somebody else who has abilities or opportunities, who has wealth or possessions or relationships that you don't have. In the story, three servants, each according to his own ability, given a different trust. One man was given five talents, huge amount of money, huge. Another two talents, another one. In all cases, they were given a great deal to work with, but some more than others. Would it have benefited, say, the two-talent man, the man to whom two talents were entrusted, $2 million, to look at, well, that guy got $5 million to work with. What am I supposed to do? I can't compete with that. The master wasn't asking him to, was he? God's not asking you to compete with somebody else who's been given different opportunities and abilities and resources than you have. By the same token, don't be lazy or condescending if another person has fewer talents than you do. Picture the two-talent man in our story looking at the one-talent man. That poor guy. He only got $1 million to work with. What's he going to... You know what? He's not going to be able to do much with that. Now, it doesn't matter what I do. I'm going to blow away his performance so I can just kind of slack off. That can sometimes be a temptation for us to look at another brother or sister who may have different circumstances in life than we do, who may have fewer opportunities, as we see it anyway, to bring glory to God in their life than we do. Does that make them less valuable? Does that make them less important? More to the point, does that make what we do with our talents any less important? Well, no. Every talent is valuable to our master. Each of these servants was given an important trust. Each of us is responsible for the trust that God has laid on us. Paul writes in Romans chapter 14 and verse 12 that each of us shall give account of himself to God. Someone else's success or failure, someone else's use or neglect of what God has provided them will not be the issue when you stand before God in the day of judgment. This parable illustrates that well. Each of the servants was called before the master individually. When the two-talent man was called before the master and said, Lord, I've taken the two talents you entrusted to me, I've earned two more. The master didn't say, well, that's, why didn't you earn five? Look at this guy over here. Look what he did. Or look at the one-talent guy. No. The master's concern was, what did you do with what I left in your care? And that will be God's concern when you stand before Him on the cusp of eternity. You won't be able to point the finger at someone else's success or failure as an excuse for your own neglect. Our duty is to use what God has entrusted to us to glorify Him. We are, after all, His servants, and His interests come first. That's what Jesus meant when he said in Matthew 6, verse 33, "Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness." Usually, because of the context of that statement, we're focused on the rest of that verse, "and all these things will be added to you." And we understand Jesus rightly to be teaching there that if we do seek God's kingdom first and his righteousness, then the things that we need, the basic needs of life, God will see to it that those things are met. But to seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness needs to be understood by seeing it through the lens of a servant, one who in everything he does is about advancing the interests of the one he serves. God's interests come first. And we are called on to do all that we are capable of doing. Which slave are you like? We often say, "Well, I'm doing the best I can with what I have." Really? Are you? Am I? Again, one of the problems that we often encounter in trying to apply the parable of the talents is all we think of is talent equals ability. And so I will hear people lament, "Well, I can't do a whole lot for the guy. I don't have the ability to get up and preach a sermon. I don't have the ability to get up and lead singing or lead prayer in the public assembly or something else like that." As if those are the only talents that matter. Folks, if that's what we are thinking, we have way, way too narrow a scope of what is being taught here. What opportunities has God created for you in your life? What resources do you have that might be put to use to glorify God? What situations are you? Are you a parent? Many of you in this audience are. Many of you are the parents of young children. If you are, then that is a $1 million talent. It is an opportunity to exercise the commands of God to influence a life toward God. It is an opportunity to bring up a child or more than one in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, as Paul says in Ephesians chapter 6. Don't think for a moment that that doesn't count as a talent. It's an opportunity. It is a trust that God has given you. What are you going to do with it? Your husband or wife, same thing applies. God's given you instruction about how to conduct yourself in that relationship. Passages like Ephesians chapter 5. What are you doing with the opportunity? Do you work somewhere? There's another one. Because God gives us instruction, as we've seen earlier this year, in how we conduct ourselves in our work environment. What are you doing there to bring glory to God in the things you do every single day? You see, it's not just about the abilities you do or don't have that can be exercised in an hour or two of public assemblies like this one here this morning. It's much, much more than that. That's why I said there are many talents that most of us share, while some others are unique. You have people you know who need to hear the gospel. They are outside of Christ and they're going to be lost if they stay outside of Christ. All of us know people like that. There's a talent. You may have some way that you can influence that person. You may, on some level, be able to teach them. You may not have great abilities when it comes to teaching people, but there are some things you can do. Can you invite that person to come to an assembly? Do what we've seen a lot of people in the Gospel of John and our study of that. Come and see. Well, you can probably do that. And you can probably sit down with an open Bible and at least communicate a few things to that person. Read some passages together, open up some opportunities. Maybe you want to get somebody else involved in that who's either more knowledgeable or a little more skilled in presenting that knowledge. That's fine. But there is something you can do, and that something is a talent. It is a $1 million opportunity that God has laid before you. What are you going to do with it? And when you start thinking about it in those terms, suddenly you realize, okay, this is not just about the abilities that I do or don't have. Because, you know, a lot of us, we look at our lives and I just don't have a lot of skill. I don't have a lot of abilities. You have opportunities. You have relationships with people. You have an environment in which God has placed you and you have committed your life to serving Him. That means He has entrusted responsibilities to you. What are you going to do with them? in your basic character and conduct, whether you live a life that is consistent with what you profess as a Christian, that's an opportunity. That's a talent. Making excuses for failure, well, that puts you in the camp of the one talent man. God, you gave me an opportunity to do what is right, but instead I made an excuse. I blamed it on my red hair or my Italian heritage or Irish heritage or German heritage. Everybody thinks their national heritage gives them a right to fly off the handle. I don't know why that is. Everybody thinks their ancestry is necessarily temperamental. Anyway, I blame it on something and I fail. That's the one talent man saying, yeah, I know you gave me this opportunity. You know what I did with it? I buried it in the ground. Here you go. What about the opportunity that you have to spend time with the Word of God? I'm operating on the assumption that you can, on some basic level, read. I'm not trying to be silly about that. Okay? How much time do you spend with an open Bible? Does it get 15 minutes a day? 30 minutes a day? Can it even come close to competing with the television set? Do you know how much you can get done reading in the Bible just 30 minutes a day? You read the whole thing through two or three times a year if you just spent 30 minutes every single day reading it based on the pace that most readers go. That's a lot of Bible study. Some of that is going to stick. Some of that is going to have a profound influence on how you think. It is going to shape your character. It is going to draw you closer to God if you spend that time with it. And that's not an opportunity that you don't necessarily have to have any great skill to be able to do that. But it is a talent. It is $1 million talent that God has put in your care. And so is the privilege of prayer. Paul instructs us to pray without ceasing, 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 17. How are you doing about that? Praying effectively and fervently in the language of James 5 and verse 16. All of us can do that. And I dare say we need to spend more time with it than we do. It is $1 million talent that God has given us, this privilege of prayer that we have. He has showed us in the Scriptures how powerful a tool it is, how very much it can accomplish in serving others, and helping, and working alongside others, and trying to help bear their burdens. And again, I know we all have differing abilities and differing opportunities when it comes to serving others. We've emphasized that this year. What opportunities do you have? What avenues do you see? As you look around this group of people this morning, think about the people that we mentioned this morning in prayer, and think, what can I do to help lighten that person's load this week? There's probably something. It may not be as grand and impressive and attention-getting as what somebody else can do. That doesn't matter. Okay, so you have 2 talents instead of 5 when it comes to that. What will you do with what you have? 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 14, Paul says, admonish the unruly, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, be patient with all. There are lots and lots of different ways that teaching needs to express itself in our relationships to one another in a local church. Paul tells us to pursue hospitality, Romans chapter 12. You may not have as grand and glorious a house as the next person. You may not have as open and free a schedule as the next person. There is something you can do to share your life and your blessings with somebody else in order to build bridges of connection with that person, in order to make their life a little better, maybe lift some of the burdens that they're carrying. You can find a way to do that, no matter how extensive or how limited the resources you have. In this same chapter, in fact, right after this parable, Jesus paints a picture of the judgment. Verse 31, when the Son of Man comes in His glory and all the angels with Him, then He will sit on His glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered before Him, and He will separate them one from another, as the shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on His right hand and the goats on His left. Then the King will say to those on His right, come, you who are blessed of My Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. Can we stop and think about the fact that all of those things described in verses 35 and 36 are in themselves not very impressive? But Jesus says, come and inherit the kingdom of my Father, because you did this for me. Verse 37, then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you? Or when did we see you thirsty and give you something to drink? And when did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or naked and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and come to you? And the king will answer and say to them, truly I say to you, to the extent that you did it to one of these brothers of mine, even the least of them, you did it to me. And in the next several verses, Jesus speaks of talking to those on his left about the very same things which they failed to do, and saying to them, depart from me, accursed ones, into the eternal fire which has been prepared for the devil and his angels. And he goes down the same list and the same reaction. Lord, when did we see you in any of these situations and not do these things for you? And he says, verse 45, to the extent that you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. The emphasis in this illustration in Matthew 25, this picture, is not on all the wicked things that people did contrary to God's standard of morality, but the simple things that they could have done and failed to do in service to others, and so in service to Him. That was the problem of the one talent man in the parable earlier in the chapter. He was given $1 million worth of trust by his master, a huge sum of money. Look at what he had to work with, and he went and buried it in the hole in the ground and just waited for his master to come back. His excuse was that he was scared. What excuse will you make for not using the talents that God has given you to bring glory to Him? You may need to sit and evaluate what those talents are. I hope I've given you some hints this morning to realize it is not just about the abilities that God has given you to do this thing or that thing. Those are great. If you've got those, then you need to be using them. But there are so many other things, so many other avenues of service that are open to each and every one of us. But sometimes we're just like that one servant in the story. We just bury him in the ground because we're afraid, because we're hesitant. We're ultimately like him, really, because we are lazy. Don't let that be you. What talents has God given you? I'll tell you one talent that God has given you that He has given every single one of us. He's given you a life. I don't know how long that life will be. I don't know how healthy it will be. I don't know how many joys and how many tears will fill it. But God has given you a life on this earth. And the purpose of that life, whatever other things you decide to pursue in it, the purpose of that life is the same for you that it is for everyone else that God created. It is, as Solomon said, to fear God and to keep His commandments. Solomon said, Ecclesiastes 12, this is the whole of man. This is what life is all about. This is what God put you here for. You at least have that. What will you do with it? And you may do all kinds of glorious and noteworthy things with that life, but if you haven't used it to serve God and glorify Him, if you haven't used that life to honor Him by serving those around you in whatever way you can, then you have missed the whole point. You have taken that life and you have buried it in the ground. We're going to sing a song in a moment that I hope will encourage you to think carefully about what's going to happen when you stand before God in the day of judgment. That is the settling of accounts that is described in the parable. Two of these servants were blessed and rewarded because they took what their master entrusted to them and they put it to work for His benefit. That's what God asks all of us to do with every blessing that comes our way, every opportunity, every relationship, every resource. every dollar, every minute. Are you going to use it to His glory or not? Are you going to use it to His glory or are you going to bury it in the ground? What will you do? The end result is made clear in this chapter. Will you use your talents to serve God? Because if you will, then His promise is that we who have been faithful over a few things will be entrusted with much.